Want to take the SoCal Sound with you anywhere? Download the SoCal Sound app to your mobile device. You could stream the SoCal Sound 24/7. See what song just played on our playlist, listen to an archived show, read an article from our newsfeed, stay up to date, or watch a SoCal Sound session. It's all there, and it's now Apple CarPlay and Android Auto compatible. Download the SoCal Sound app today.
I'm Nick Harcourt, and I'm really happy to say that actually it's two Nicks in studio this morning. Nick Lowe, welcome.
Thanks, Nick. Nice to be here.
Thanks so much. I know you've been here before, and we were just trying to figure it out. It was about 12 years ago, and I think I saw you sort of, I was on my way out, and you were coming in to do an interview with our former PD, Sky Daniels, and you were talking about a Christmas record at the time, we just figured out.
Oh, back then.
Yeah.
Yes, I suppose it would have been.
Yeah.
That's right.
Right now, we're going to talk about your new record. But before we do, for those who are not aware of who you are, I'm aware of you from when I lived in the UK in the late 70s and into the early 80s. But best known for songs like Cruel to Be Kind, working with Elvis Costello, Graham Parker, who I actually knew up in Woodstock. He was up in Woodstock.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
For a while. And, you know, you worked in pub rock, I guess it was called at the time.
Yeah.
And then into New Wave, and I love the sound of Breaking Glass. I love that song. So cool. But obviously, you've done a lot of other stuff in the years in between then, and most recently, you're working with Los Straitjackets, and you've done a record with them that we're going to talk about. But how did you connect with those guys? Because you've been touring with them for, what, a decade?
Yes, a long time. It's a band I've been with longest. Really, I've been in a few bands in my time, but
Rockpile,
LSJ are the longest. Well, actually, a connection goes back to what the record you were just mentioning, the Christmas record, that I made this Christmas record and 10 or 12 years ago, however long it was now, and to everyone's amazement or surprise, not amazement, because we did think it was a good one, but it was very well received, especially in the United States. And but shortly after it was finished and came out, two of the main protagonists in the creation of it died one after the other, both very good friends of mine. And it really took the wind out of my sails. And I didn't promote the record. And time went by, and the great thing about a Christmas record, of course, is that every Christmas,
every 12
brand
months,
new.
You
know.
Ask Mariah Carey how that works.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So after a bit of time went by, and it was gently suggested to me, look, perhaps you might want to do some shows here, you know. So, and what about doing them with LSJ? And my manager, Jake Ralnick, also manages Los Straitjackets, so it's not that much of a leap, you know, that we should do something together. And they were up for it. For those of you who don't know, Los Straitjackets are the premier surf rock instrumental band, and they're known for performing with wearing Mexican wrestling masks.
Where are they from?
Well, they are based in Nashville,
but
one of them lives in LA, actually.
Right
here. So all over they live all over the States, but they're sort of based out of Nashville.
Right. So it was suggested to you that they would be a good band for you to
back me up and do a Christmas tour.
Right.
And we'd make it into a Christmas show.
Right.
Know? So we did most of the tracks from the record and one or two, you know, well-known Christmas classics rocked up, you know, and a couple of things like Cruel to Be Kind, you know, a couple of my better-known tunes, and said, oh, well, let's try this out. And it went pretty well, you know, it went pretty well. So well enough so that we did it the next year. And well enough from that to do it in Europe. And after that, we thought, that's peak Christmas.
We're done for Christmas?
Yeah.
Right.
But we'd done a couple of shows on that tour when something clicked, you know, and it really, the roof came off. A couple of others, but one gig in Spain, another one in Atlanta, I remember we did. When suddenly we all came off stage and said, man, this is something really cool, you know, with this. If if we just junk the Christmas stuff, you know, and start doing something else, we
can always come back to it next year.
Yeah. And it never goes out of never goes out of style, in and out of fashion, maybe.
Right.
So that's what we did. We started doing out of season work, you know, and then we saw our audience start to get bigger and younger as well. I noticed a lot of more younger people coming. It became evident that we should have something to sell on, at least just on the merch table. We really didn't have any aspirations higher than that.
So, right.
Fact is that I live in London, they live in the United States, so we could only really record when we were on tour. So we'd book a studio in a random city we were appearing at.
Right.
And, you know, you never knew quite what you were going to get. As you know, most records nowadays are made in small rooms with
sure.
a computer, you know, and great records too, you know. But with our thing, because it's got a modern vibe about it, but it's definitely built on a kind of retro frame, our music is. And so in order to record that kind of music, you've got to have a room so where we can all play at the same time, because rock and roll doesn't really sound any good if you do it bit by bit. You know, it's got to have a feeling and a...
Understood.
Yeah. So...
So live to tape.
Yeah. And they're hard to find, those kind of studios. That's all you could get at one point, but not anymore. The results of these recordings we made were mixed, to say the least, because of the recording facilities, or even in some cases because the songs weren't entirely finished when we came to record them. And we put them out. You know, we sold them on the merch table.
So this was like singles and EPs, kind of?
Yeah, EPs, actually.
Right.
Two four-track EPs
right.
we put out. And they sold all right, but it wasn't the sort of quality we were after. And,
right.
and by this time, of course, these songs were now finished and we'd played them in front of people. That's the other thing, you know, that's the way you... That sort of music especially improves is by playing it in front of an audience six or seven times, and
right.
then you really see where you are then. And by this time, the songs were all in shape. So it was suggested that they put these, maybe it was three EPs we did. I think it was three. Yeah, it was 12 tracks, something like that. And so they suggested we put them all the tracks together on a one vinyl album, and I didn't mind the idea of that, but I said we can't put those versions.
We've got to re-record.
We've got to re-record them, or more revisit the original versions and do new vocals or to you know just. So that was okayed, and so we went to see a guy called Alex Hall, a great engineer and musician who's got a studio in Chicago.
Right.
And he oversaw the re-recording and the remixing of these tunes and made it sound like it was recorded in the same week instead of over a period of about 4 years.
Understood, yeah.
And again, the record's been extremely well received. I'm pleased to say.
Came out towards the end of last year,
it
right?
It did, yes.
It's called Indoor Safari. So that in itself. Putting together a bunch of different recordings from different times and different places how many songs are on the album?
12, I think.
Right, so 12 songs on the album. That in and of itself is an art for somebody to be able to sort of get into the weeds of the previous recordings and then
yeah.
make it all sound, like you said, like it was all recorded in the same week. How did you pick the songs that were going to be on this album? Because I know it's a mix, as you said, of some of the stuff that you'd been doing before, but also revisiting some of your classic tunes.
Yes. Well, it was quite obvious. There were certain songs that were strong, the definitely strong songs. And I'm not prolific enough to just junk cool songs, you know, just, you know, because they weren't recorded right.
Right.
Know? So there were some of them that we had to do again, you know, or either re-record them or In one case, there's a song called Tokyo Bay, where the original recording was actually pretty good.
Right.
But it didn't sound quite right, you know.
Right.
So that was quite easy to fix. And also, I wrote a couple of new songs as well. I had a couple of new songs that were pretty good, you know. And so we recorded those. On the original recordings, there were a few covers that were a bit. They were okay. You know, they did the job at the time, but you don't really want to hear them,
right?
You know, hear them again,
right?
We recorded some new covers actually. So, I always like to put one or two cover songs on my records because I think it sort of demonstrates that you're not totally obsessed by your own artistry and skill. You
sure.
know, I think it just shows, you know. Gives a little variety.
The best way to stay up to date with the SoCal Sound is by signing up for our email newsletter. Get the inside scoop on station events, ticket giveaways, and pre-sale opportunities. Go to thesocalsound.org and click sign up for the email newsletter at the top of the homepage.
So as a songwriter, and we were talking before we started recording about, you know, the good fortune for any songwriter who has something that becomes a hit. Because that keeps you in the public eye. People hear that song over and over again, and it probably pays the bills as well. Mm. As a songwriter today, do you still write on a regular basis? Do you still?
Yes, I do actually. I've found the older I get, though, I've lost the drive to tell people stuff. You know, when I was a kid, even if it's stuff they already know.
You mean tell people stuff in your lyrics?
Yeah,
right.
Or in the way you've recorded a song, you know,
okay.
to surprise people,
right.
you know. That I used to be really keen on doing that. And the older I've got, you know, I just think, oh, bloody, you know, shut up, who cares,
right.
you know. So, I think that I know a lot of songwriters, and they feel the same way, you know, that does happen. But you can't really turn it off. You can't turn it off, and you can't turn it on either. I've tried doing that, forcing songs. I know I've got some friends who are successful songwriters who actually go to work every day, get up and go, they have an office and they go, you know.
I interviewed Nick Cave many years ago, and he told me that he had an office.
Yes.
And he would get up and go to the office to write songs. That's a particular discipline.
It is, and I tried it for a while with some success actually.
Right.
I used to go to there was a pub not far from where I lived, but it had a great little community hall attached to it. Just a little place, and they'd have scouts meetings there, and the yoga classes and things like that,
right?
And comedy club and that sort of thing. But it had a fabulous acoustic in this place. It was all made of wood, and it
right.
had a great. And so I'd just take an amp and a guitar, and I'd just stand in the middle of this place and strum the guitar. And I wrote a few good songs like that, but it didn't last for long, you know. But I can see the sense in going, and actually the physical thing of going to work and forcing yourself to do it, but there wasn't enough result for me to carry
right.
on doing.
Well, did you find yourself just sort of sitting around saying, "Oh, I'm supposed to be doing this right now," but?
Well, I'd go into a sort of Zen-like frame of mind, which I used to quite enjoy. But yes, the short answer, I think, is probably yes.
So this record's out, as we mentioned. It came out towards the end of last year, and obviously you're touring. Again, how is it actually touring with a real record now instead of just the sort of demos and EPs that you had? Now you actually have like a full body of work that you can.
Yeah, that's a great question actually, because there definitely is a difference. We're noticing, as I said, a lot more younger people at our shows. A lot more women seem to be at the shows as well, and they seem to really like these later songs. They seem to know them, and in a strange reversal, you know, most people's early songs are what everyone wants to hear, and with the younger people, I've noticed they're not really that pushed about my earlier early stuff.
Right.
They like Cruel to Be Kind, you know, because sure. they've heard that. That was a bona fide hit. And I have another song which has never been a hit, but it's very well known, called What's So Funny About Peace, Love and Understanding.
The one that you did with Elvis Costello,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. And it's been recorded by a lot of people, you know. So songs like that, they're pleased to hear those. But some of the stuff I used to do, for instance, with Rockpile, you know, who's very popular in America, you know, that band back in the 70s, if we hadn't been so having such a great time, you know, we probably would have actually had quite a lot of success here.
But I was reading something before you came in about that, because I remember Rockpile and with Dave Edmunds, and I was reading something that said that there were actually several Rockpile albums, but because you guys were on different record labels, you sort of had to put them out as solo records, and there was actually only one Rockpile official album,
yeah. which was probably the sort of weakest one. We'd kind of lost our mojo by that time. But yeah, I mean, Cruel to Be Kind is Rockpile.
Right.
You know, that is a sort of Rockpile record, really. Right. And Dave had three or four big hits in America with the songs that were Rockpile records. But yeah, that's quite true. Yeah, yeah. I did about two or three albums which were Rockpile.
So Los Straitjackets are clearly your band.
Well, they're not my band. They're
but your band that you work with. Sorry,
yeah.
I know they're their own thing.
Yeah,
but you work with these guys. You go out on tour with them. You're making records with them. Is that something that you think will continue to evolve? Because this is the first record for about 11 years.
Yeah, I thought I'd had enough of doing it, right, actually, because I thought of that. What's that expression? You know, the definition of mad insanity or something. Is it doing the same
repeating
thing?
Repeating something and expecting different results.
Different result. Yeah.
So, story of my life.
So, mine too. I thought, oh, wait a minute. You know, do I really want to do this? It's so expensive to make. In the way I was talking about before, you know, there's studios with a room and getting five guys together, you know, to play. That's why no one makes records like that anymore, you know. So I thought, well, probably I've had my go at this, and I've got quite a big repertoire, you know, of songs. So I probably had enough. But anyway, you change your mind, you know, and along comes this, and I'm very pleased about it. And I don't know if we do another record. We certainly like to keep doing the live shows because we enjoy it so much, and we get good crowds, you know. And frankly, that's how most musicians earn their living if they're lucky enough to
gigging.
Yeah, to do that. That's where the dough is now.
Well, I am so happy to get to meet you, first of all, instead of just passing in a corridor 12 years ago, and to talk about the new album. It's called Indoor Safari. And Nick Lowe, pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Nick.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
I woke up early with love starvation, hugging my pillow all alone in a rickety bed. Baby, if it's any consolation, the needle's in the red. It only hit me when I went by a mirror, that's when I saw what was written all over my face. I'm suffering love starvation, a very bad case. I tell you something about love starvation. It's like a prison in your mind you're locked up in. Disappointment, desperation, your two old friends. Make it stop, if only I could turn back the clock. Make it so, cause I tell you that I can't exist in a world like this. Or even one I can dream in black and white. Any love is better than no love, so any love. make it stop, if only I could turn back the clock. Make it so, cause I tell you that I can't exist in a world like this. I woke up early with love starvation, hugging my pillow all alone in a rickety bed. Baby, if it's any consolation, the needle's in the red. The needle's in the red. Love starvation, baby. You got me on the back foot. It's put me in a dark and lonely place. It's got me never knowing if I'm ever going to start living again. Love starvation, baby. Love, 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 love. I'm on a lonely street, but nobody told my feet they're walking on air, cause somebody cares for me. I'm in a blue hotel room like a prison cell, but I'd sleep on the stairs while somebody cares for me. In a dim saloon, anytime before noon, there's an empty chair, cause somebody cares for me. I find myself in church, I don't come in here much, but I'm saying a prayer, cause somebody cares for me. It's like I filled a hole that was shaped all wrong, with a piece of a puzzle that's been missing all along. If you think I'm glad, I'll say I'm more than that. I'm glad as can be that somebody cares for me. Well, it's like I filled a hole up that I was shaped all wrong, with a piece of a jigsaw puzzle that's been missing for too, too long. Well, if you think I'm glad, I'll say you got that, Dad. I've got more than my share, cause somebody cares for me. I'm glad, so glad, I'm glad as can be. Somebody cares for me.
The SoCal Sound Sessions are produced by 88.5 The SoCal Sound. Session hosted by Nick Harcourt. Audio recorded and mixed by Tristan Dolce, edited by Matt Blake. The SoCal Sound is a public service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College, streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.